Moncrief on News Talk.
According to a large study carried out in the UK and the US, people in their 20s are miserable and far less happy than their parents. Now, you might say it's because they're all snowflakes or they have unrealistically high expectations from life, but it could also be that they live in a world where, for a young person, it is difficult to be optimistic about the future. We're joined by the child and adolescent psychologist Coleman Nocter. Coleman, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. I imagine that, that there's a lot of factors to this. And I suppose to get a couple of ones out of the way, one argument might be that the phrase mental health barely existed 30 years ago, so people didn't talk about it as much. Now there's much more of a focus and awareness of it. Young people would use a lot of the language of mental health or pseudo-language of mental health, which might perhaps lure them into kind of pathologizing things that are just really unhappiness.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. I mean, I think we have veered into mental illness promotion rather than mental health promotion sometimes. You know, you can get that kind of TikTok thing of, you know, do you like to put things back where they belong? Well, then you've got OCD, that sort of stuff, and it pathologizes things. I think there are certainly a section of people who might think all types of worry is anxiety and all types of sadness is depression, when in fact they're not. That's just part of life. But awareness is only some explanation as to why, you know, people might be struggling. We're also seeing higher levels of suicide attempts. We're seeing high levels of self-harm. So that would suggest that there's genuine kind of, you know, bona fide, really struggling with their lives. And again, it doesn't matter whether that we believe that the reasons for their unhappiness is valid or not. They're still very unhappy and we need to do something about it. And I think we need to meet people where they're at rather than where we'd like them to be. And there are real concerns. There's real stuff going on. And I see a lot of that young adult kind of 21 to 26 year old group coming through to me. And I would see a great deal of emptiness and sadness and apathy and hopelessness around the future, which wouldn't be a feature of that age group 10, even 15 years ago when I would have been involved in kind of therapy with that group before. So there's definitely is a shift for sure.
Yeah. And now the hopelessness, what do you put that down to, or what elements do you put that down to?
Well, I think on one hand, they'll give you quite practical examples of where income and wages and the potential for house prices, like home ownership is huge in Ireland. It's this kind of sense of, you know, once you have that, you've kind of achieved or you've gotten there. I know that's not a global issue, but for us in Ireland, home ownership is important, and many young people would see that they'll never be able to either afford to buy a home or certainly ever be able to live somewhere where they want to live or where they grew up and all of that sort of stuff. Huge levels of student debt. There's a huge amount of anxiety around employment prospects. And again, a lot of the narrative around AI is going to get rid of all these kind of entry-level jobs. That's a big issue that's come up maybe in the last 6 months or so, people having anxieties and a kind of a hopelessness about the future. You know, we live in a really politically fragmented world where there doesn't seem to be any sort of room for moderate discussion. So they're being forced to kind of pick a side and they're not entirely sure what side they need to pick. And, you know, there's lots of that kind of, again, sociocultural issues. And then let's not forget, a lot of these guys would have gone through the pandemic at a really important developmental stage as well. So maybe the transition from secondary school to college might have been hugely disruptive. But for me, the biggest issue that I see is loneliness. A genuine, real hunger and appetite for some, what they would describe as a real connection. If you take the dating world, is kind of mediated through apps now. There's very few opportunities for young people to gather. Like, Sean, I work in a third level university, and I can tell you that once it gets to 5 o'clock, the campus is dead. There's nobody around. Everyone is either traveling back 120 kilometers to their parents' house because they can't live nearby or they can't afford the kind of rental crisis and all that sort of stuff. Or that, you know, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of opportunities for young people to gather together. And I just, that loneliness seems to kind of, it accompanies that emptiness and the hopelessness that a lot of them seem to be struggling on their own. And a part of that is because I think we've become so individualized as a society. You know, a lot of it is a focus on the I rather than the we. And that group seem to really, And I genuinely think they want a much more communal, collective experience, but they're just really struggling to get it. And again, technology has a huge part to play in that, because these guys have never been more digitally connected, but physically isolated.
Yeah. Funny, I was talking to somebody yesterday on the show, and it was kind of a slightly different subject, but the starting point of it was he was trying to have a 20-year reunion with friends he was with when he was on a J-1, and there was like 17 of them or something in a one-bedroom apartment in Chicago, and it was the best summer of his life. And it's kind of like young people aren't getting opportunities like that because, you know, that those kind of intensely bonding experiences.
Yeah, no, we were only looking at kind of doing a reunion for when I used to train as a mental health nurse. You know, the nurse, the hospital was a real hub of social activity and out every Thursday night and all that stuff. And we were kind of talking to people who still work in the hospital, and they're all saying, oh, it's not like that anymore. You know, Nobody tends to go out on a Thursday night. We don't tend, none of those social gatherings tend to happen anymore. And there seems to have been, you know, and I think, before we would have had people we hung around with and people we went out with and people, we got lots of our collective happiness from different people. I think now young people are placing all their happiness either in their employment or their relationships. Do you know what I mean? So they have to be the sole source of all of those things. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And it places huge expectation on, you know, I have to have a job that I'm passionate about and I love. And, you know, as Chris Rock says, you know, follow your passion if they're hiring, you know, that kind of way, that kind of sense of, you know, that we need to love everything. And the person where we meet has to be our life coach, our best friend, our, you know, person we go drinking with, the person we go hiking with, the person, we, you know, and that level of expectation, because we've lost that sense of the village or the community, is being allocated into these kind of solar things. It's kind of, you know, because we don't have collective communal experiences. And again, I would think that's crucially important to what is missing for a lot of these young people. They're looking to overcompensate in other areas of their lives.
Yeah. There's a kind of it strikes me, a lack of something. Now, I mean, because you mentioned the very fractious political atmosphere, so people don't know where to be in that, but something to believe in. And I don't mean necessarily in a religious sense. There's a whole generation of people who rejected the Catholic Church, I mean, long before kind of all the sex abuse scandals happened. And that, you know, in an odd way, was something to believe in. I don't want to be hidebound by that kind of morality. That's not there. There's nothing either to rebel against or to follow.
No, and you're absolutely right. I think there's certain people, a lot of would have a spiritual side, you know, that we want to have something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, and again, I'm not trying to push kind of religious affiliation or anything, but religious organizations were very good at gathering. They organize, you know, people say, oh, we only meet at funerals and weddings, you know, that kind of way. So when in absence of that, there is an absence of an opportunity to gather. But I would see loads of young people going to things like heavily into mindfulness or really strict gym routines or ice baths or, you know, something almost akin to a transcendence to try and find something bigger than that. You know, I was struck by the people who, I wasn't at Oasis, but a lot of people were kind of trying to explain it was so magical just to have this kind of nostalgic shared experience of everybody being together. And like in reality, the two things that you can do to really improve your mental health beyond doubt is to volunteer or to join a choir. And but they're both joined kind of communal, collective, purposeful, meaningful experiences. And it's not the singing, it's the coming together. And it's not the volunteering, but it's the idea of having purpose and an act of service, if that makes any sense. So I don't see the opportunities for young people to get those types of collective experiences, and certainly that absence of something bigger than ourselves, you know. And I've had discussions with young people in class in university, and they would say, you know, I envy my mother's faith, because it must be nice to be able to put your worries somewhere or in a kind of spiritual space. And they might say, people will laugh at me for saying this, but, and there's almost like that, there's a stigma around that too, as well, about seeking something spiritual. So yeah, I think there may be a lostness in that. And I'm not, again, not saying that pushing religious affiliation, but there's something that was part of society that's left a void that we haven't been able to kind of replace, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, but there's no, say, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, really, that you could attach a sense of social change to young people, which isn't there anymore. I mean, there's massive social change taking place, but it's not an awful lot of young people probably feel terrified by what they're seeing around them, no more than people of any other age.
Yeah, well, I would always say, like, we've had so many one-in-a-century events in the last 5 years. We had a global pandemic, climate crisis, two kind of international conflicts. Like, prior to that, it was kind of 9/11. You know, we had 20-odd years where there was nothing. But there's kind of, they're kind of braced for the next disaster as well. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, this is a really unprecedented time in history. But if you were only 16 or 17 in 2020, that's all you've known, is that this is the way the world is. And there's that uncertainty and all of that that goes with it. So, you know, oftentimes we don't appreciate that they weren't really old enough to appreciate the chapters that went before, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And going back to the loneliness, as you know, in their physical world, they probably experience a lot of loneliness. So you kind of, it's understandable you pick up your phone, but it would strike me that just exacerbates that feeling rather than relieves it.
Well, it does when you have the kind of tyranny of choice and the tyranny of comparison, social comparison, where it looks like everyone else is much more connected than you are, you know, and you know, everyone else seems to be a CEO at 22 and I'm not. And, you know, if you were to believe LinkedIn, everyone's so humbled and privileged because they're doing everything, you know, having all these opportunities. So it would make you feel like, gosh, I'm missing out here, or I'm not part of something, or how can I be part of something? But I always say, like, when we talk about social media, you have to think about it as an opportunity cost. It's not necessarily what you're doing for the 9 hours a day that you're on TikTok that's damaging you. It's what you're not doing while you're spending 9 hours on TikTok, if that makes any sense. It's,
yeah,
you know, the other stuff that we would be doing if we weren't doing that might involve connecting with other people. And we've mentioned this before, like, the technology is designed to leave you as digitally and virtually dependent as possible, but to leave you as physically disconnected as possible, because they want you to spend time on this phone. So they're not going to design something that's going to encourage you to meet in person and put your phone down.
Yeah, yeah. Coleman, thanks very much for speaking with us today, as depressing as that was. That was Coleman Nocter there, the child and adolescent psychotherapist. Anthony in Galway says, everything Coleman says is true. I'm 56. I have three kids in their 20s. In my 20s, you could get a job anywhere. Now it's, can I get a good enough job and a partner with a good enough job and get a household up and going? Also, us parents of a generation with few opportunities have burdened them with unrealistic expectations. Disappointed generation, I feel sorry for them. Well, you're right, of course. But also, our kids are looking at their parents and going, you actually have it better now. I don't expect to be in the position. If you see what I mean, Anthony, your kids may well look at you and go, I don't expect to be in the same position as dad is when I'm dad's age. Because it, you know, the idea of having a house or, you know, raising kids and all that stuff, it seems to be vanishingly small at the moment. Kate says, I wonder, would young people be better off getting a job when they leave school instead of going straight to college? Then they can live at home, earn some money, travel a bit, have fun and enjoy life. They might find they don't actually want to go to college and have massive bills on their back, or go to college as a mature student. Looking at my own experience, I didn't go to college. I got a job, made friends, had a fun social life between the ages of 18 to 26. And I wouldn't change it for anything, says Kate. Well, absolutely. There's a hell of a lot of common sense in that. I imagine some people might feel, you know, they'll feel that anxiety about, you have to get into college as soon as possible because you've been studying so hard for your leaving cert and blah, 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 blah. And a sense that you might get left behind. But of course, as you know, especially around in the last few weeks, as they've been hearing in the media constantly, it's not the end of the world not to go to college. But that message doesn't always get through to people. But surely having ambition about your careers and our relationships is important to happiness too. Says the texter, we need hope, surely. Of course, of course. I absolutely agree with your guest. We're a social species. We need a community, and the only place that most people, young people, have a communal experience is online gaming. Barry says, not to blame you, Sean. Oh, gosh, but you're about to, I think, Barry. But I think a large part of the reason is a misleading narrative peddled by media and social media that this is the worst time ever and everything is crap. I was a young adult in the 80s and it was much worse, and we had two world wars, for God's sake. I don't know how well you did at history when you were at school, Barry, but I think those two world wars were long gone by the time you were growing up in the 80s. But that's not comparing like with like. You can't say that there's a direct comparison between the way things are now and the way things were then. There are certain things you could say are better now, obviously, than they were in the 1980s. But other ways, such as the things as communal experiences, that's kind of broken down in a lot of countries in the developed world, not just in Ireland. I don't want to oversimplify it, but can you ask your guest if there's something of a self-fulfilling thing about us talking about mental health issues all of the time? Well, that was the first question I asked him, actually. I mean, because there probably is a little bit of that. But that's not the entire cause of it, one would thought. Eamon says, I'm going to take the easy way out here and say it's all down to capitalism. First, it robbed us of meaning in our jobs. Then it robbed most of us of the ability to make ends meet. And now it's robbing us of the natural world. Well, you're not wrong there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.